Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Amanda Curtis starts her campaign with a concerted effort to raise badly needed funds. That's our top story on Montana Evening Edition. Good evening, I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Christopher Allen. Montana's unemployment rate ticked up by just a hair last month, and a little girl lost her life yesterday in Yellowstone National Park.
Democrats from across the state gathered Saturday and selected Amanda Curtis as their candidate for the U.S. Senate. The political newcomer and classroom teacher replaces Senator John Walsh on November's general election ballot. Walsh was appointed to the seat in February by the governor. He recently ended his campaign to keep that seat amid a plagiarism controversy surrounding his 2007 research paper at the U.S. Army War College. Jackie Yamanaka has more from the Democrats' special nominating convention in Helena on the challenges Curtis will face against a Republican opponent who is a better-known and well-funded congressman.
Amanda Curtis tackled those issues during her speech to the delegates before the vote. She asked Democrats to make a leap of faith.
Because the national media and the political class has already decided that this race is over. But I've got a secret. None of those folks get to vote in the state of Montana.
Curtis said her strength is grassroots support. The first-term state representative from Butte pledged to hit the ground running, but she said she can't win without the help of other Democrats. Curtis says Montanans can't be bought with TV ads produced by out-of-state political consultants.
And if we win here in Montana, outspent, outgunned in a race where we were left for dead, it'll send a message to Washington, D.C. that we want change.
She said this race draws a clear distinction, that she's a working classroom teacher who comes from blue-collar union roots. And she called her Republican opponent a millionaire who wants more tax cuts for his buddies.
This election could decide who controls the U.S. Senate. I don't mean the Republicans versus the Democrats. I mean the millionaires versus the middle class. This is the fundamental difference between Steve Daines and me. He seems like a nice guy with a wonderful family, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't understand what life is like for the rest of us.
This race is for the open seat that was vacated when incumbent Senator Max Baucus stepped down earlier this year to become the next U.S. ambassador to China. Minutes after the Democrats' nominating convention was gaveled to a close, Congressman Steve Daines issued a written statement. While he did not mention Curtis by name, Daines said this November, Montanans will have a clear choice between his agenda for more jobs and less government, or more government and fewer jobs. And the Montana Republican Party issued a written statement saying the Democrats have handpicked a candidate who is out of touch with Montana and all too eager to rubber stamp President Obama's agenda. When asked about that later during an interview, Curtis said that's what campaign people always say, because it's all they have. She says Montanans, regardless of party affiliation, care about the same issues: access to public lands, privacy, good jobs, and a quality education for all students. As you know, U.S. Senate race is down and dirty. It is national level. You saw what happened to John Walsh. Are you and your family prepared to have your lives stuck under the microscope, and are there any skeletons in your closet?
I've been an open book, and I've been accessible throughout my time in the legislature. I've been honest and open about my family over in Billings and who we are and where we come from, and no one can ever prepare themselves for an attack on your character, but Montanans are smart enough to see through that.
Curtis faced off against Dirk Adams at the nominating convention. Adams unsuccessfully ran in June's Democratic primary. After the vote, the rancher and retired banker threw his support behind Curtis.
You know, in any way that she asked me, I'll be available to support her, and of course I'll support her financially as well.
The general election is November 4th, but many Montanans can mark their ballots early, by about a month, through absentee voting. Jackie Yamanaka, YPR News, Helena.
Curtis, meanwhile, won't benefit from the $713,000 left in Senator John Walsh's campaign bank account. Walsh can only give the legal limit of $2,000 to the Butte candidate's new campaign. The Bozeman Daily Chronicle reports Walsh can donate the money to charity, multi-candidate committees, or transfer it to local, state, or national parties. Walsh's donors also can ask for a refund since he dropped out of the race over plagiarism allegations that he said had become too much of a distraction. That means Curtis will have to start from scratch in raising funds for the race against Republican U.S. Representative Steve Daines and the $1.7 million he has in his campaign account. She can ask Walsh donors to give to her campaign.
In other news from around the state, Governor Steve Bullock and Lieutenant Governor Angela McLean are traveling the state to promote the work being done on an economic development plan Bullock released this year. Bullock and McLean will visit colleges and businesses this week to discuss workforce training. That's one of five key areas identified in the Main Street Montana project. The aim of the plan is to help businesses grow and increase wages. Bullock will visit Anderson Steel Supply in Great Falls tomorrow to give an update on a grant that will allow the business to partner with Great Falls College on expanding training programs. McLean will travel to Glendive to discuss workforce employment related to the Bakken oil boom. Bullock will also attend the groundbreaking for a new Missoula College building, among other stops.
Montana's unemployment rate ticked up ever so slightly to 4.6% last month, but state economists don't seem particularly concerned. Montana Department of Labor and Industry Chief Economist Barbara Wagner says that's an increase of just 0.1% from June.
And while that sounds like really bad news, it actually is good news. One of the reasons why the unemployment rate increased a little bit is because we had a lot of people moving back into the labor market, and that can cause the unemployment rate to increase. Even though we had pretty good job growth last month, Montana continues to add jobs.
Wagner adds the unemployment rate should be viewed as a long-term trend.
Montana's unemployment rate has really been declining since 2011 and dropped a lot this year. So this is kind of just one momentary pause in a longer downward trend.
The U.S. unemployment rate also increased by 0.1% last month.
And that's a kind of a big deal nationally, more so than it is in Montana. There's been a lot of concerns raised nationally that we've had too many people get discouraged in the job market, and they haven't been looking for work like they should be. And when you have more workers, you can produce more GDP, and our economy gets better off. So it's important to keep workers in the labor market. So both of this at the national level and the state has been good news, even though the unemployment rate has increased slightly.
Payroll estimates suggest Montana added 3,100 jobs over the last month, with 2,500 of those jobs in the private sector. Jobs were added in the financial activities, healthcare, and leisure activities sectors. Total employment, which includes payroll employment plus agricultural and self-employed workers, added 159 jobs in July.
Haver residents say leaflets apparently from the Ku Klux Klan appeared at homes in parts of the city, including one where many Native Americans live. The Haver Daily News reports the leaflets bear the insignia of the United Klans of America and say, quote, "Neighborhood watch, you can sleep well tonight knowing the UKA is awake," unquote. They were placed in baggies and distributed over the weekend. Some were weighted with small stones. Similar leaflets have been reported in towns in Alabama and Connecticut over the past year. John Abar of the Montana UKA says the group is organizing in Haver, but declined to provide details. A call and email to the national organization were not returned today.
Bail was set at $2 million for a Great Falls man suspected of killing a Cascade County Sheriff's deputy during a chase while the suspect was awaiting sentencing on a robbery case. Adam Sanchez Jr. has not yet been charged in the August 14th death of Deputy Joe Dunn. The 40-year-old Sanchez made an initial court appearance Saturday in his room at Benefice Health System, where his release was revoked. The Great Falls Tribune reports District Judge Greg Pinsky also ordered that Sanchez be booked into the Shodo County Jail in Fort Benton upon his release from the hospital. The decision means Dunn's co-workers won't be booking Sanchez into jail. Cascade County Attorney John Parker said today the investigation is still ongoing and authorities are in the process of interviewing eyewitnesses. Prosecutors moved to revoke the release granted to Sanchez while he awaited sentencing for an armed robbery and chase last November. Prosecutors said Sanchez tried to rob a man that he shot with a crossbow and then led law enforcement officers on a chase. Public defender Matt McKittrick requested bail be set at $150,000.
A family is mourning the loss of their little girl after a terrible accident this weekend in Yellowstone National Park. Park spokesman Al Nash says the accident occurred yesterday morning in Yellowstone's Grand Canyon area.
A young girl was with family members. They were along the North Rim Drive in the canyon area of the park. They parked at a trailhead to the brink of the lower falls. The girl was part of the group that was walking along the trail to the observation platform. Got about two-thirds of the way down the trail, she stepped off the trail, lost her footing, and fell 550 feet into the canyon.
Nash says park personnel retrieved her body around noon yesterday. Zahra Al-Hiari was 8 years old. She was from Poway, a Southern California community near San Diego. The incident remains under investigation. It's the third accidental death in Yellowstone National Park this year.
Officials in Yellowstone County have released the name of a man who fell to his death from the Rim Rocks in Billings last week. Deputy Coroner Chad Fair says it appears 22-year-old Scott Harrington of Billings died in an accidental fall late Thursday. Harrington's body was found at the base of the rim shortly before 10 p.m. Thursday. Fair says Harrington died of head injuries. Police say someone called 911 at about 9:45 p.m. to report they saw someone walking on the rims and then heard a noise.
Officials in northwestern Montana say a 62-year-old Missoula man is missing and presumed drowned after falling off a boat in Middle Thompson Lake, about 45 miles southeast of Libby. The Lincoln County Sheriff's Office tells KECI-TV that Anthony Joseph Bachman fell off the bow of a moving pontoon boat at about 6 p.m. on Saturday. Others on the boat tried to rescue Bachman but were unsuccessful. He was not wearing a life jacket. Sheriff Robbie Bowe says efforts to recover Bachman's body continue today. The lake is about 160 feet deep on the spot where Bachman fell into the water.
A 19-year-old man died in a one-vehicle crash in southwestern Montana over the weekend. The Montana Highway Patrol says the man from Taylor, South Carolina, was eastbound on Montana Highway 200 northwest of Missoula at about 3:45 yesterday morning when his car crossed the center line, went off the road, and hit a guardrail. The car slid along the rail for about 50 feet before spinning and coming to rest in a ditch. The Missoula County Sheriff's Office tells the Missoulian that James Christopher Klingen was the only person in the car. He died at the scene. The cause of the crash remains under investigation.
Missoula County Fire Protection Association officials said today that they will lower the fire danger from very high to high starting tomorrow. Public Information Officer Jordan Copen says despite the downgrade in fire danger, Stage 1 fire restrictions are still in effect.
From the past weather that we've had and the weather that we're expecting, we feel comfortable with going to high. The people at the restrictions agencies around the county and around the state here have been discussing what to do with that, so that's under discussion at this time.
A Stage 1 fire restriction means campfires are not permitted outside of metal fire rings, and smoking is still prohibited outdoors near flammable materials. Open debris burning also remains closed in Missoula County. Copen says rain and increased humidity were the main reason why officials lowered their restrictions, but those weather conditions aren't expected to last long.
Once the sun hits it, could be a few hours. Usually our reference is three dry days and things have dried out again, so... Especially, we've had pretty consistent 5 to 7 mile an hour winds, too, and that definitely dries out the woods. So, yeah, we're definitely urging the public to be especially careful in the woods still. Just because we've got moisture doesn't mean that we can be careless.
We'll have more weather information later on in the broadcast.
The former director of operations at the old prison museums in Deer Lodge has pleaded guilty to embezzlement and forgery. The Montana Standard reports 55-year-old Julia K. Brewer was charged in Deer Lodge County but entered her pleas Thursday in district court in Butte. Prosecutors allege she deposited more than $25,000 in revenue from the museum into her personal bank account, while court documents indicate a shortage of about $70,000 from the 2013 operating season. Court records say Brewer forged the signature of the president of the Powell County Museum and Arts Foundation to obtain a credit card, which she used to make personal purchases. Charging documents allege payments on the card were made from the museum account. Brewer remains free on a posted $25,000 bond. Her sentencing date has not been scheduled.
The forecast west of the Divide tonight calls for clear skies with lows in the mid-40s to low 50s. Tomorrow should be partly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the 80s. Central Montana should have clear skies tonight as well with lows in the upper 50s. Tomorrow will be partly cloudy with highs in the 80s. Watch for isolated showers and thunderstorms tonight in southwest Montana. Otherwise, there's clear skies with lows 45 to 55. Tuesday, there's a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon with highs in the upper 70s to mid-80s. And now for the editorial comments of Julia Altimus.
There has been quite a bit of opinion writing lately about whether members of Congress should focus on place-based federal forest land pilots or whether they should work to pass comprehensive federal forest reforms. On the one hand, place-based efforts are homegrown initiatives that carve out temporary solutions to meet local needs, while a comprehensive reform package offers sweeping changes that land managers, timber companies, and timber-dependent communities can rely on for the long term. Under past Senate Energy and Natural Resource Committee leadership, place-based initiatives were the darling of the committee. With different leadership in worsening forest conditions, that is no longer the case. There is a growing national concern over the health of our nation's forests, escalating fire suppression costs, and the economic stability of our timber-dependent communities. While the national forest system was created to serve as working forests, external forces have been at play over the past 25 years that have made achieving the goals set in the Multiple-Use Sustained Yield Act almost impossible. These forces include a handful of aggressive litigants working to prevent timber harvest on federal lands, 73 million forested acres subject to insect and disease infestation, rising fire suppression costs, layers of laws, rules, and regulations that drag analysis out for years, and declining budgets. Of the 193 million National Forest System acres, 143 million are forested. Of this total, 96 million are capable of growing 20 cubic feet of timber per year and are thus classified as timberland. Of this subset, only 46 million acres are designated by forest plans as having a timber objective. That is only 23% of the total acres. Timber harvest has declined by more than 80% over the past two decades. These reductions have devastated rural communities where sawmills and paper mills provided some of the only stable year-round employment. Of the 56,000 direct jobs lost in the West, Montana lost roughly 3,300 jobs, 27 sawmills, and one paper mill. In 1990, the Forest Service sold 12 billion board feet of timber and burned 4 million acres. In 2010, the Forest Service sold 2 billion board feet of timber and burned 8 million acres. Currently, the agency spends over $2 billion annually suppressing wildfires. This is more than 50% of the total Forest Service budget. Passage of the Farm Bill delivered new opportunities for the Forest Service to partner with state, city, and county agencies to implement projects that not only restore forest health but economic viability to rural communities. We are cautiously optimistic in the success of these programs, but recognize efforts will likely run smack dab into a buzzsaw without further federal forest reforms. The Forest Service currently spends $356 million annually on NEPA compliance. Therefore, reforms must streamline NEPA analysis, ESA consultation, and judicial review of the projects on the 23% of the federal timberland already designated for timber production. Reforms must set volume and acres treated targets to ensure accountability. Reforms must clarify to the courts that timber production is the primary objective, which allows resource managers to focus on timber economics in the design and implementation of projects. Fire suppression dollars must be taken offline and put into a natural disaster emergency account. The Forest Service can no longer afford to be a $2 billion fire department. It must focus on preventative forest health measures instead. The Healthy Forest Restoration Act must be amended to ensure project recommendations brought forth through a collaborative process have standing in court. Thousands of stakeholder hours are put into developing project recommendations, only to have their collective work derailed by outliers. Judicial reforms include requiring plaintiffs to put up a bond to ensure frivolous lawsuits stop flooding the courts, and that plaintiffs must prove to the judge the likelihood to prevail before a temporary restraining order can be awarded. Collectively, these reforms set the Forest Service on a trajectory of reclaiming their multiple-use mandate, offers long-term stability to timber-dependent communities, and to an industry that is committed to supplying the nation's wood products. On behalf of the Montana Wood Products Association, I am Julia Altimus. Thanks for listening.
Julia Altimus is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Christopher Allen.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.
Today's program is partly sponsored by Three Rivers Mental Health Center in Missoula and the Bitterroot Valley, offering mental health services to adults and children, including case management, therapy, and medical psychiatric care by Dr. Philip Holman, 830-3294, 3RiversMHS.com.